This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's Daily Politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Fraser Nelson. And we have the confirmation today from the Prime Minister that a public COVID inquiry is coming. James, give us the details.
So it won't start until next year. Boris Johnson's argument for why that is the case is that he thinks that there's a risk of a resurgence this winter and that preparing for this inquiry is going to take up a considerable portion of people's time, like Chris Whitty or Patrick Vallance or people on the SAGE committee. And obviously, he didn't say this, but obviously people like him as well. And he wanted to wait until you were through the winter before you got there. I think given how long public inquiries take, this means it's highly unlikely that this inquiry will report before the next election. Indeed, looking at how long some public inquiries have taken, I don't think it's even certain it will report before the election after next. And we don't yet know who is going to head it. I think one of the big questions, which will tell us about what kind of inquiry it's going to be, is it headed by a judge? In which case it will be a kind of classic, slightly prosecutorial inquiry. Or is it headed by a public health professional who would have a kind of, I think, a slightly different approach? And then I think the other big question is the terms of reference of the inquiry, which we don't yet know yet. Does it look at not only how did the UK handle this pandemic, but how well prepared it was for this pandemic? Because that might cast some of the government's actions in a very different light. Or is it specifically on how the government handled this crisis? I think there is an element, as Robert Peston wrote on Coffee House here, of the government trying to get out ahead of Dominic Cummings' appearance before the Health and Science Technology Select Committee, who are conducting a kind of their own kind of mini inquiry into it. I think the government from now on will respond to all questions about whether lockdown came too late or not. By saying, look, we're having a public inquiry into this, that's going to establish the truth of this. The Prime Minister thinks he struck the right balance, kind of thing. I mean, the interesting question is, which Keir Starmer asked in the Commons today, is this public inquiry, is it just going to start scoping out its terms of reference, working out what it's going to do in a year's time? Or are we going to get ahead of it appointed earlier than that, so that basically they're completely ready to hit the ground running come the summer of next year?
Fraser, do you think the good results of Boris Johnson in the local elections have made him feel more confident that he can go for a public inquiry and not have it dent him?
To be honest, I'd be amazed if you went for anything less than the public inquiry. We get them pretty seldom in Britain, but let's face it, this is one of the most, the biggest events in our post-war history. It is, and also, what's the purpose of this public inquiry? It's to let history record in as accurate detail as we can what went wrong. Now, you can't do a rushed job on this. And also, the hugely important thing about COVID is that it's about trade-offs. Now, we know about the COVID dead. We get those figures every day. But what we don't know is the impact on cancer care, the impact on depression, on mental health, on the economy. Those things will take a lot longer to see. This is what the Swedes say so often. Every time they're asked if they did the right thing by rejecting lockdown, Anders Tegnell, the state epidemiologist, says that it's too early to tell. We won't know if Sweden did the right thing for a year, 2 years, sometimes 3 years. In the case of swine flu, it took something like 4 or 5 years for it to be clear just how widely it had spread, and therefore that the infection fatality ratio was no worse than normal flu. So I think to have a sped up inquiry would have a useless inquiry. I mean, not entirely useless, perhaps, because if you look at the other two comparable inquiries, we had the foot and mouth disease that broke in the beginning, just to the turn of the century. And by, I think, 18 months later, Ian Anderson's report came out. That was an excellent report. And it revealed exaggerations made by a certain Neil Ferguson at the time about how bad things would be. And then the swine flu inquiry, you got a Quangocrat, Deirdre Hine, who reported, I think, pretty soon, probably again 12 to 18 months after the initial disease outbreak. So you can do these things more quickly. But something on the scale of COVID does require, I think, a massive public inquiry as opposed to the parliamentary inquiry that Dominic Cummings had been calling for.
And James, when it comes to the timescale here, so we expect this inquiry to get underway before the next election, but not conclude?
Yes, I think it will get underway before the next election. I suspect it will take in evidence from some high-profile figures, possibly including the Prime Minister, before the next election. But I don't think its conclusions will be out before then. I mean,
the thing is, I think of the Hutton inquiry, which I covered, on the Iraq War. The actual evidence session is really the story. The conclusions of these inquiries aren't usually the great revelation they're made out to be. The very process of taking evidence, of publishing emails, that's what's going to let us all look under the bonnet of what's happened in the last 18 months. So I think it's a bit to think about when it comes out. I think isn't the revelation. The revelation is going to be the sessions are held in public.
Yes, but I also think there's a question about how prosecutorial this inquiry is, right? If you think of Leveson, Leveson was an inquiry that basically took as its premise that politicians had got too close to the press.
Yeah.
And so when politicians gave evidence to that inquiry, they were effectively being cross-examined by a QC about what was going on. The Chilcot inquiry into Iraq was basically based on the idea that there had been intelligence and foreign policy failures and failures of the process of government, and that was looking at it. I mean, the interesting question is, what will its operating basis be from? Will it be that the British state failed and more people died than needed to have died because of those failings? Or will it take, as I think Boris Johnson was trying to kind of hint at in his common statement, will it also look at the fact that the UK very rapidly got vaccine production up and running, managed to purchase enough vaccines that it got on with vaccinating its population quicker than most other countries, and that what looks like being the case at the moment, it will end up with a death toll in per capita terms relatively in the middle of the pack in European terms. And then I think also, will it look, as Fraser said, at some of these other trade-offs and, you know, what more could have been done there? How much will it look at the kind of preparatory work for this inquiry? You know, are we going to see former health secretaries on the stand talking about this? Are we going to talk about people who did the pandemic preparedness plan talking about this? So I think we wait to see what tone the inquiry takes. And I think obviously one of the powers the government has here is it picks who conducts the inquiry. And I think that will be very significant to the tone and style and approach of the inquiry, which will determine whether Boris Johnson's appearance is it going to be essentially being him in the dock almost, in the way that David Cameron was in the dock at Leveson essentially, or is it going to be much more Prime Minister, talk us through your thoughts at this point, Prime Minister, explain how well do you think this bit of government worked in comparison with that bit of government, do you think you had the data you needed to make such massive decisions, all that kind of stuff. So I think we don't yet know what kind of inquiry this is going to be. We know it's going to have the powers of public inquiry, but who the chair is going to be absolutely crucial.
Now, Fraser, James mentioned Dominic Cummings and the evidence session we're going to be getting in around 2 weeks. You've written previously that actually Boris Johnson doesn't have that much to fear from a Dominic Cummings evidence session. But I suppose looking both at that and then the public inquiry that will follow, what do you think are the most dangerous points, if any, for the Prime Minister and this government? What could come up that could dent them?
What could go wrong is if he accepts the deeply controversial premise that COVID cases were surging right up until the 23rd of March lockdown, and only lockdown was capable of controlling the virus. Now, this, at the moment, is the established wisdom, but subsequent studies have shown this to be perhaps not true. We can now see right around the world people trying to draw an association between lockdown and virus control, and there isn't that strong a link. However, there is, as Neil Ferguson points out in his new book, Doom, quite a strong link between lockdowns and economic collapse. Now, right now, I think it's going to take, again, a while to look at all the experiences of lockdown and ask, for example, why was it that countries that didn't lock down were still able to force back the first and the second wave? Might it be the case that people's own behaviour is what forces down the virus? And this is such an important point because we will absolutely get another similar virus again. And only when that happens will we be able to work out, do we do lockdown or simply is it too blunt a tool? That's why I'm all for this being looked at in as rigorous and as scientific a way as absolutely possible. But I will say, I mean, James mentioned the Chilquot inquiry there. That did shake my faith in public inquiries a bit, because I had thought there that the big scandal of that our experience in Iraq was the fact that Britain took on Basra, lost control of it, and left its citizens to die at the hands of jihadi death squads. But the Chilquot inquiry seemed to come at this right from the word go, from the question of why we fought rather than why we lost. And so we never really learnt, which I think was such an important lesson, which is the grave peril and the lives that we cost if Britain does, in a military conflict, take on something for which it's simply not equipped.
And James, finally, we've heard a lot in the early stages of the lockdown debates about doves and hawks. We also heard about scientists versus ministers. Do you think we could potentially see a bit of a blame game playing out in this inquiry? Because we've heard secretaries of state such as Therese Coffey, saying, "Oh, look, we were just following the scientific advice. If there are mistakes, it's on that." And do you think those tensions might pop up again?
I think that one of the things that will protect Boris Johnson is that I think he has essentially followed the science. I mean, however reluctantly at points, he has followed the scientific advice. So things that people say, like, how on earth were the Cheltenham races allowed to go ahead? The government scientists were in favour of that, as opposed to being against that. Why wasn't everyone told to wear a mask straight away? Again, government scientists weren't in favour of wearing masks. Even if you take the whole controversial circuit breaker lockdown idea, which Dominic Cummings is, we are led to believe by Robert Peston going to kind of criticise the Prime Minister for not having gone for that. You know, Jonathan Van Tam said that he wasn't sure whether it was the right policy given how you had different infection rates in different parts of a country. So I think that will provide some information. I think there's also a very interesting psychological question. I was talking to a Labour strategist the other day who's currently not working for the party. And I said, you know, what do you think Keir Starmer should be about this? And he said, look, think that this person was convinced that the public will not want to think about COVID almost ever again once this crisis is over, that people won't actually want a kind of massively detailed look at what happened. They will just want to forget about it. People will think this was an awful year and they'll want to kind of put it in a box and kind of lock it away. And this person thought there was actually very little political mileage in Labour in kind of going on mistakes made during the pandemic because the public just don't want to think about it anymore. And the vaccine has essentially persuaded people that the UK is going to end up in a kind of fairly average position in European terms in how it's dealt with the virus. And as the election showed you, every incumbent party in England, Scotland and Wales got a kind of bounce because there's kind of seems to be a kind of public sense of this was an unknown crisis and the various governments in the UK and England, Scotland and Wales, have all dealt with it, not brilliantly, but they have got some things right. And this was a kind of unforeseen crisis that it would be a SARS-style disease rather than an influenza pandemic.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Fraser. And thank you for listening.